Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Civil Rights and Employer Retaliation Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 24, 2013, the Supreme Court announced its decision in University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center v. Nassar. The question in the case is whether the retaliation provision of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 requires a plaintiff to prove but-for causation, or instead, merely requires proof that the employer had a mixed motive, essentially that retaliation was one of multiple reasons for the adverse employment action. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit held that the mixed motive standard applied. In an opinion delivered by Justice Kennedy, the court held by a vote of 5-4 that employee retaliation claims under Title VII must be proved according to traditional principles of but-for causation, not the lesser mixed motives test. The decision of the Fifth Circuit was vacated and the case remanded for further proceedings. Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Scalia, Thomas, and Alito joined the opinion of the court. Justice Ginsburg filed a dissenting opinion, which Justices Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined. To discuss the case, we have Charles Shaner, who is a professor of law at Emory University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Shaner.
This is about the University of Texas Southwest Medical Center versus Nassar. When I introduced this case before argument, I suggested that it lay at the intersection of two conflicting streams of Supreme Court employment cases. One stream gave plaintiff-friendly readings to allow retaliation actions. The other stream provided defendant-friendly readings of what it takes to prove adverse action was because of protected status or conduct. The Supreme Court in the Nassar decision, a 5-4 decision, decisively chose the second stream. It held that the retaliation provision of Title VII required plaintiffs to prove they would not have been subject to adverse action but for their opposition to discrimination or participation in Title VII processes. In doing so, it rejected the use of the plaintiff-friendly 703M approach, where a plaintiff can win if he or she demonstrates a prohibited action was a significant factor in the adverse action. Here's the factual background in brief. Dr. Nassar, a doctor of Middle Eastern descent, became an assistant professor of internal medicine and infectious diseases at the University of Texas Southwestern and associate medical director of the UTSW clinic. His superior, Dr. Beth Levine, inquired into his productivity and billing practices and once stated in his presence that, quote, Middle Easterners are lefty. After Nassar applied for a promotion that Levine undermined, Nassar resigned from the faculty, citing Levine's harassment in his resignation letter, and he later sued the University of Texas Southwest under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Nassar argued the University of Texas Southwest had constructively discharged him because of national origin and had retaliated against him when he complained of Dr. Levine's harassment. The trial judge gave the jury an instruction that Nassar did not have to prove retaliation was the only motive for adverse action by the medical center, but only that the medical center acted at least in part to retaliate. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit held that there was sufficient evidence to support the jury's finding for Nassar on the retaliation claim, but not to support the constructive discharge claim. Six judges voted in favor of rehearing in bank, and eventually the Supreme Court reversed the Fifth Circuit, saying the Fifth Circuit should have required Nassar to prove that, but for his complaints of discrimination, he would not have suffered adverse action. Here's the basic analysis that the Supreme Court used in its 5-4 decision. The majority emphasized that this was a statutory construction case, and that the statute had two separate provisions. First, Title VII made it an unlawful employment practice to discriminate against an individual because of five personal characteristics. race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. Second, in a different provision of Title VII, Congress made it unlawful to discriminate against an individual because the individual complained about, opposed, or participated in a proceeding about prohibited discrimination. Thus, the majority separated out the status-based provisions of the statute from the conduct-related provisions of the statute, status being things like race, color, religion, sex, or national origin, and conduct being complaining, opposing, or participating in. In 1991, Congress amended Title VII. The amendment loosened the requirements plaintiffs would have to make in order to prove that something happened because of prohibited factors under the statute. This amendment, Section 703M, said that, quote, except otherwise provided in this title, an unlawful employment practice is established when the complaining party demonstrates that race, color, religion, sex, or national origin was a motivating factor for any employment practice, even though other factors also motivated the practice. In cases where this provision applies, the causation standard is lowered. The majority of the court held that Congress lowered the causation standard for the status parts of Title VII, race, sex, etc., but did not intend to and did not lower the standard for the conduct part of the statute, opposition or participation. The majority strongly relied upon an ADEA case, Gross versus FBL Financial Services, to support its conclusion. In Gross, the court previously had held that a plaintiff claiming age discrimination has to show that before the age discrimination, the individual would not have been adversely treated by his employer. The reasoning was that, since 703M does not affect ADEA cases, Congress, using the words because of, meant the plaintiff had to prove, as in other tort cases, but for discrimination, that the discrimination was the sole motive for the decision made by the employer. The court thus extended the Gross reasoning. When Congress spoke in 703M of any employment practice taken for the prohibited list of reasons, it did not include retaliation in those listed reasons. Had Congress desired, it could have amended Section 703 and Section 704, including retaliation, within the scope of Section 703M's lowered standard for causation. Here are the basic consequences of the decision. Like other decisions this term, including those involving arbitration and sexual harassment, this decision was a big win for employers. It was a big win in two ways. First, it tightened the requirements for proving retaliation claims. Retaliation claims already win many times when the underlying race, sex, religion, or national origin claim fails. Why? Simply because the plaintiff merely needs to show that an adverse action was taken against him after his opposition or participation, regardless of the merits of his original claim of race or sex discrimination, for example. For plaintiffs, if the motivating factor standard had prevailed, they would have had an easier time of proving the most common Title VII claims made today, retaliation claims. As a result of the decision, employers will be able to argue that other legitimate reasons, not just the retaliation, led to adverse treatment of the plaintiff. In such a case, there would be no adverse action, quote, but for, end quote, the retaliation. Not surprisingly, the four liberal dissenters, Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, expressed concern that two causation standards under Title VII would be confusing. They also disputed the statutory construction reasoning of the majority opinion. The majority simply replied that if there's confusion, that's an issue that should be directed to Congress. The second consequence, if you will, of this decision is that the Supreme Court has shown its willingness, not only in retaliation cases, but in any other area where Congress does not explicitly change the standard for causation in a tort-like statutory framework, to use but-for causation as the residual or fallback standard. In short, that means that other statutes, also not explicitly amended by 703M, like the Americans with Disability Act, will likely be interpreted as in Gross and now as in Nassar. In short, employers will applaud this ruling, and organizations and supporters of plaintiffs' claims in the employment discrimination area will decry how it has made things more difficult for them. Ultimately, of course, Congress can, as it did in 1991, revisit causation and other issues under these statutes. But of course, in the current context, it's unlikely that Congress, at least in the near future, is likely to go back and do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.